The subject I'd like to talk about today is a method to Bible study. It kind of segues into what my dad was talking about. I think a big mistake to make as believers, especially us because we know a lot about the Scripture, is to think we know everything in the Bible. I think of the passage in Proverbs that says the key to wisdom is fear of Elohim. And I think humility comes along that. You can't really know anything unless you humble yourself before that knowledge. Hey, Jose, could you reset the timer? I don't want to go over. Thank you. The Bible has a lot of relevance for our day today. You know, you think of, a lot of people think that books are outdated, the Bible is outdated, their teachings are outdated. They're in the past, you know, we're in the future, we would need to look forward to different things. But the Bible has a lot of relevance today. You know, there's character studies, we can learn about history, we can see exactly what they did right and what they did wrong. We can learn life lessons from them. We can learn economics, actually, if anyone has that interest. You can learn about sabbaticals and stuff and what's right and wrong in economics, how to make money, how not to make money. Also, future events. We can learn about what's going to happen. And I'm not an expert on this, so don't think that, you know, I know everything about the Bible or I know all the aspects of how to study the Bible. A lot of what I learned was actually from this book, Living by the Book. Highly recommend it. I'm going to go through a couple of the techniques or things in this book, but I recommend purchasing it for yourself because there's no way that I could spend 30 minutes covering everything in that book. So I'd like to share what I've learned from that book and also just from my own experiences and from others in studying the Bible. Three key methods I'd like to go over. I think if you approach everything with a method of doing things, you'll get a lot more out of everything you study. Observation is the first key. You want to come to this thinking, what do I see in this passage or series of passages? Then you want to interpret it. You want to ask, what does this mean? And then lastly, you want to ask, how does this work for me? And then how does this work for others? Observation. This is the first one I like to go over. What do I see? Interpretation is typically the first thing we do. You know, we see a passage, and we don't scour down into the nitty-gritty of what's going on. And we go to, you know, how does it work, and how does it apply to me? And you can gain so much from just observing what's going on around you, almost becoming like a detective, you know, like a Sherlock Holmes type figure, just seeing everything that's going on in the picture, getting the whole environment, and then using that information to understand what the text is telling you. Let's ask some questions during this observation phase. Who is in this story? Who is it being talked about? What is being said about this person? You know, learn as much as you can about them. You see a certain character. Just dig as much as you can historically or from other passages about this person. What does the person say? You know, Peter is a great example of this in Matthew 17, whenever he's at the Transfiguration with Yahshua. He just blurts out about making three tabernacles for Yahshua, Moses, and Elijah, which were the three figures that are in that Transfiguration. You know, I can only imagine just his amazement in this scenario, but he just blurts things out, and that's his typical thing that he does in situations. He got into trouble a couple times, you know, whenever he denied Yahshua three times. Instead of thinking things through, he just blurted out that he didn't know Yahshua. It did come to his benefit, too. In Matthew 16, whenever Yahshua asked him who they thought he was the first one to speak up and say that he was the Messiah, the Son of Yahweh. Good or bad, this is something that we can learn about Peter. We can learn that, you know, he was a guy that spoke first and thought later, almost. Another question to ask is where? Where is the narrative? Where are the people in the story? Where are they coming from? Where are they going? Where is the writer? Paul, whenever he wrote the book of Philippians, you know, this whole passage, the term joy is spoken about all throughout, being joyful and stuff, and him being joyful. In Philippians 2, verse 2, he even is telling the people living in the city, fulfill ye my joy, that ye be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. You come to find out, you know, he writes other passages about joy and fulfilling his joy and just being joyful. You come to find out he's writing this in prison. You know, how joyful would any of us be if we were in prison writing a letter to another city? You know, would we be that joyful? So you got to understand where they are at the time. When is another question. When do these events happen? When do they occur in relation to other events in Scripture? For instance, in Mark 1, verse 35, it says, in the morning, rising up, and this is talking about Joshua, rising up a great while before day, he, this is Joshua, went out and departed into a solitary place and there prayed. So he woke up early and went somewhere by himself to pray. But you come to find out in the previous verse, in Mark 1, verse 34, and he healed many that were sick of diverse diseases, and he cast out devils, and suffered not the devils to speak, because they knew him. You know, he must have been exhausted the day before. I mean, this must have just tired him out, having to meet with all these people. You know, and he doesn't sleep in. He wakes up early, he goes and he prays, and he does what he thinks is necessary to please his Father and to get close to him. Another question to ask is why? Why did this person say that? Why does this precede that? This is kind of digging for meaning, you know, asking this why question. Why are these things happening? Why is this important to me? And then one of the last questions to ask is, what difference does it make to me if I apply this in my life? You know, we can have tons of information, but everyone wants to see everything that's relevant to them. You can get tons of information, but if it doesn't mean anything to you, you're just going to pass it off as just as trivia. And the last question is, what was it like for them? You know, really understanding it from their point of view and from their shoes. You know, these were real people written in this book. These aren't just stories, fictional stories about people who, you know, lived and, you know, someone wrote it down coming out of his head. These are real people with real problems, and they were not perfect. We're not perfect. We can learn a lot from them by understanding what they went through and helping us. What were they feeling? You know, human nature hasn't changed since Adam and Eve. You know, the same temptations, the same problems. You know, technology changes, ideas change, but human nature is just not changed. With our imagination, we can see the scenario happening. You know, in one of the best things I can think of was in Judges 11, when Jephthah was made judge, and he needs Yahweh's help to win a battle. So he makes a promise to Yahweh in Judges 1, verse 30. And he says, Jephthah made a vow to Yahweh. He said, if you will indeed give the sons of Ammon, these are the ones that are fighting against, into my hand, then it shall be that whomever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be Yahweh's, and I'll offer up as a burnt offering. So we come to find that Jephthah does have a victory. Yahweh gives him the victory. And I'm sure he's very excited. You know, he's probably coming home. You know, he's elated that he had this victory. And his daughter comes and greets him. You know, could you imagine just what a sinking feeling this must have been? Just how terrible he must have felt. Just a crushing defeat for him. You know, he had this great victory, but he probably didn't care anything about it just because he spoke ill. Feel what they felt. You know, put yourself in their position. I think you can get a lot out of it, having that sense of empathy. So let's apply this. Let's use an example. Nehemiah 1, verse 1 through 2. Let's go and try this stuff out. The words of Nehemiah, the sons of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So let's ask the first question, who? Who are the people introduced? Well, the first one is Nehemiah. He wrote this book. You know, it says, the words of Nehemiah. So he wrote it. It's not like Jeremiah, where Benaiah actually wrote it. You know, this is almost like his events that happened in his life. He lives in Shushan. We know that he lives there. Why? Why does he live in Shushan? Well, he's actually a captive. Why? Why is he a captive? Nehemiah was written historically, if you look at the time frame, was written during the Persian rule. Judah was defeated by Babylon. You find that in the book of Jeremiah. And then afterwards, Babylon was defeated by the Medes and the Persians. So this is this is actually a Persian city. And what does he do? He is a cupbearer to Cyrus of Artaxerxes, which you'll find out actually if you read to the end, if you read all the way through. So this is what he's doing. Let's ask him questions about what he does. What is his profession? Cupbearers drank some of the king's wine. You know, what's the purpose of having a cupbearer? It's kind of weird for us, you know, nowadays. But there were people maybe didn't like the reforms that the king may have had, and so they tried to assassinate him. So he served to protect as a barrier between that assassination. Because of this, it made him put him in a very confidential position. You know, you got some guy that's tasting all your food for you. You got to trust him, you know. So that's a little bit of what he did. What does it say about Nehemiah? What did he say? What did Nehemiah say? Well, he asks them, he says, them concerning the Jews that has escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. You know, he wants to know about his home, his news about his home. He's stuck in this city of Shushan. He's captive. He's working as a cupbearer, and he wants to know what's going on at home. What are some other people that are introduced? Well, we've got Hanani, who is Nehemiah's brother, it says, and certain men of Judah. So what can we get from this? Well, we can see that Nehemiah has more than one brother. It says, one of my brethren. Therefore, if it's one of his brethren, therefore he has multiple brethren. And they came from Judah with news. So they had a purpose for coming. It wasn't just some sort of social retreat that they were having, just visiting Persia. Where? Where is this happening? I said Shushan the palace. Let's look at a map here. Here's a map of the Persian Empire, and you can see on the slide right there is Susa. Shushan is Susa. And then in the middle there on the left side is Jerusalem. So that's a pretty good distance. It must have taken a long time. It is actually about 500 miles. I did not figure out, maybe this is something you can do in your own time, I did not figure out how long it would take for them to travel 500 miles, but it takes me several hours driving in my car. So I imagine it took them several months to talk to their brother. And so when did this happen? This happened in the month of, actually, did I? I forgot to add that slide in. Oh, well. When did this happen? This happened in the month of Chislu. What's the month of Chislu? This is the ninth month of the biblical calendar. And it says it's in the 20th year. 20th year of what? Well, in Nehemiah 2, verse 1, get some more context. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king. So this is the 20th year of, there we go, 20th year of Artaxerxes' reign is what it's talking about. Why? Why are they coming to see Nehemiah? You know, they had some news. They knew that he couldn't just leave Jerusalem at that time, so they had to come visit him. And why does Nehemiah ask this question? Well, he cares about the people. He wants to do something. You know, he's a captive in this city. And wherefore? Learn, you know, why? What does this have to do with me? Why should I care that Nehemiah is stuck in this city and he's asking these questions? We learn that more in the later passages. You learn why this has importance. All of this information I gathered just from these two verses. I could keep on going on and on more about it. I encourage you to kind of do the same thing, to use this almost like a jumping point to study more about Nehemiah. I love the book of Nehemiah. It's got a lot on leadership and making right decisions. Before moving on to clues to look for in Bible study, I'd like to go over a few more questions to ask or things to find. Things that are emphasized. look at the amount of space that's given in a certain passage. You look at Book of Genesis. Book of Genesis starts out with this sweeping overview of the of creation, you know, all of time and space wrapped up into this one chapter. And then you have these two characters in the next few chapters. And then you keep on moving on with all of creation. And then everything focuses down to Noah. And then from there you've got more people. And then everything focuses directly upon Abraham. And the rest of the Bible pretty much follows his family, his life, and everything accordingly. The amount of space, I don't know, you can maybe you can gather some information from that, but look at the amount of space that's used for subjects. Stated purpose. Sometimes books actually tell you why they're written. John 20, verse 30 to 31, he says, "And many other signs truly did Joshua in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you might believe that Joshua is the Messiah, the son of Yahweh, and that believing you might have life through his name." So he specifically says why he wrote this book. Look at the order of which things happen. Genesis 2, verse 15, it says, "Adam and Eve cultivated the earth." So work happened first, and then sin happened. So sometimes people think that work is a terrible thing, where in fact work came first before the sinful act. Look at the order of how they happen. Things that are repeated. Look at terms, phrases, clauses that are repeated. For instance, in Philippians, the word joy is repeated all throughout. Look at characters that are repeated. Sometimes you see a character that happened that is mentioned one time, but then you see a number of characters like Peter, John, Paul that are mentioned several times throughout the Bible. Look at patterns. Patterns are all throughout the Bible. It's just riddled with patterns. You know, correlations of one event to another event. I mean, most of prophecy is all about patterns. Joseph's life is a great example relating to Joshua's life, you know, drawing that pattern between the two people. Things that are related, you know, this is questions and answers. Cause and effect. Anytime you see the word therefore, look to see why it's therefore. Therefore. Is usually pointing back to something else. You know, it's not there just because. Or look at the word but. It's using it as a way to contrast something else. It's relating one idea to another idea or contrasting that. Charts are a great way to organize these things. The RSB, this is a plug to the RSB, has some great charts. I didn't have this in my slides because I didn't get the file. But here's a great chart of the days of the creation, and it just goes through and just shows exactly what happened. This would be an example of order. What happened the first day, second day, third day, fourth day? You can learn a lot by just seeing what happened first and what happened afterwards. But these charts are great ways for us to see examples so we can make our own charts. You know, so we can see these observations in the Bible and say, well, hey, I want to make my own chart. You know, I want to make the and charts are really just a way of organizing your thoughts. You know, the next section I like to go over is interpretation. So we have observation, now we have interpretation. What does it mean? And observation kind of pulled everything apart. Well, in interpretation, it kind of puts everything back together again. Some things to look for in interpretation: content. But this mostly comes from the observations that we made. You know, just seeing exactly what's going on. Context. This refers to what goes on before and what goes on after. You know, reading a few verses before, reading a few verses after, or reading a few chapters before, a few chapters afterwards. Great example of this is Acts 10. You know, many people take this chapter out of context. They believe that it's giving license to eat whatever you wish. But you come and read a little bit further down, and you realize that it's talking about Gentiles and not, you know, Gentiles becoming clean and not, you know, pigs becoming clean to eat. Comparison, comparing scripture with scripture. You know, most scriptural problems can be sorted out just by reading other passages about that same subject. For instance, in Mark 15, you know, some people may be confused about this passage. It talks about the Pharisees are upset with Joshua's disciples because they're eating food with unwashed hands. Well, you may be thinking, well, where's that in the Bible? You know, I got to find that. So if you compare that to the Torah, you find that, well, it's not in there. It's actually in the Talmud. But if you compare that to the rest of the Bible, you come to find out that, well, it's not there. It's got to be somewhere else. Culture is a great thing to understand in your interpretation. For instance, this is a beautiful painting done by Leonardo da Vinci. Really beautiful painting, very famous. But there are a couple glaring problems with this. For instance, why does Joshua have Italian clothes on? He also looks like a supermodel. Says that Joshua was, nothing good to look at, but he's got this curly hair and just looks, amazing. The other thing, too, is how they're sitting. They usually, back in the day, you come to look at this in history, they actually reclined whenever they ate. They didn't have these tables like you see here. So you got to understand the culture whenever you come to these things, understand what's going on around them. History books are really great about this, understanding the culture. Consultation, concordances, Bible dictionaries, commentaries, just getting some extra input from other people to understand scriptures. Learning definitions of words. Key to wisdom really is defining words and what they mean. You can learn a lot from just each word. And then learning ideas from others. Next section, and the last section. Now, I spent a lot of time in the observation phase because I think the more time we spend in observation, the less time we have to spend in interpretation and in application. Because you're getting all this information, you're gathering all this information together, and then you're putting it to good use. The next step is application. And this is the step where you do actually put it to use. This is... Oh, did I skip a page? Okay, yeah, I did. This is asking the question, how does it work? It's not just about getting through Scripture and trying to speed read through stuff and just say, oh, I got it through it, You want to let the Bible get through you. You want to, have it seep into your soul. You don't want to just be a repository of facts and observations. We've got books for that. We don't want to be just a Google search kind of thing where we just have facts. We want to know stuff. We want to have it change our lives. And I think this is the toughest part of study is actually taking the information and having it change us. It's hard to change. You got to look at yourself. You got to look at your weaknesses. It's not an easy task seeing the ugly truths about yourself. And the other thing, too, is you got to change yourself first. This, I think, is the hugest challenge for teachers. I apply this to myself, too, whenever I'm up here. Am I applying this to myself, or am I just telling this because it's good information? Teaching with self-application. You never want to teach somebody anything unless you're willing to do it yourself. That's a challenge for those up here, and it's a challenge for anybody in any position to tell anybody anything. You want to change your life first before you decide to change in others. One thing you must understand, though, is interpretation is one, but application can be many. What do I mean by this? It depends on what you need in your life. You can read a passage. We can both read the same passage, but we can both get a truth out of it that we need at that time. It may be different for you. It may be different for me. A great example of this is in Genesis 1, verse 16. It says, Elohim made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule night, and they made stars also. So what can we apply from this? Well, we can, we see talking about creation and Yahweh creating things, and we can apply just how great Yahweh's power is. But did you know that our forefathers used this passage to learn about the idea of separation of government? Powers of government. You see the two great lights and the separation of the powers and stuff. I'm not going to go into that further. If you don't get it, just trust me. This is what I mean by application. You can see it's really about what questions are you asking. The interpretation is always going to be the same because these are the facts, the solid facts. But how you apply those solid facts depends on each of our needs. Steps in application. You have to know. You have to know the text. This comes from the observations and interpretations or interpretation. And you have to know yourself. You have to know your strengths. You have to know your weaknesses. And this is where the tough part comes, because, you know, it's asking us asking ourselves those tough questions about ourselves. We all have strengths, you know. Not each one person is given gifts, but we also have many weaknesses too, and facing ourselves is a challenging aspect. Then you have to relate this to our experiences, reflecting on the past and how we can better improve our situation instead of just reliving our past failures. Relate the word to our lives. You know, how does this work for me? You know, and then also asking, how can this work for others? You know, so much of our time is rushed in this world. You know, we're constantly going from thing to thing, and we always have entertainment at our very fingertips, and we don't always have time to just sit and think, just ponder ideas, and just take the time to just let it seep in. You really need to have time to meditate to truly learn anything. It's not a contest. It's not a race to see who can learn stuff the fastest. Everyone learns at different paces. But you just have to take that time. You know, the Sabbath is a great way. You know, Sabbath has so many aspects, so many facets of why Yahweh gave it to us. And I believe one of them is this meditation part, because he knows that we'll just work ourselves to death and keep on doing stuff and not take time to pause. And he says, no, you're going to have one day out of the week to pause. You know, a great example of this for myself. Years ago, I was into reading tons of self-help books, and I would just, you know, buy them, and I'd read them, and I'd go through them. And then I would read the next one, and I'd read the next, and I'd read the next one. Problem is, you know, I got stuff out of them, but I went too fast. You know, for me, it was more of an exercise and seeing how many books I could read and how much I can, you know, show people how much I could read. But do I remember everything in them? Well, not really. The same thing can apply to the Bible. It's not about how much you can read, but what you do with that reading. And the last aspect is just trying it in your life. You know, we just experiment, see if it works. Just try it out and try to better your life through these observations. In conclusion, I hope this has helped. I encourage you to continue finding things in the book of Nehemiah. Just keep on working down. It goes through a beautiful prayer. I encourage you to see exactly what the prayer is actually in three parts, and he talks about different sections. I encourage you to try to find those three sections. It's actually three key themes that he goes through. And just move on through the rest of Nehemiah, see exactly how his life went. And, you know, keep on going on with the rest of the Bible. Remember to observe, to ask, you know, what's going on, interpret, what does it mean, and to apply. How does this work for me? How does this work for another? And I think we can get much more out of our Bible study this way. And the last incentive I like to give for Bible study is this. You know, we take having a book like this for granted. I take a book like that for granted so much. The conveniences that we have, the technologies that we have, you know, back in the day they had scrolls that, you know, that were very expensive to produce. You know, you had to actually have scribes, you know, writing these things out by hand, whereas nowadays we can have a printing press print, you know, thousands out at a time. I don't want us to take these things for granted. We may not always have our Bibles with us, or maybe there's a time where we may not ever have the ability to have Bibles. It says in Amos 8, verse 11, "Behold, the days come, saith my sovereign Yahweh, that I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of Yahweh." Sorry. You know, whether this is a time for us or not, we need to apply it like it is. We must learn the scriptures well and be ready if this does ever happen to us in our time. But if not, we should still use that same urgency to change our lives for the better, you know, to encourage our other people, to encourage ourselves, and also to strengthen ourselves. May Yahweh bless.